back, Chris. Some are sicker than others, you know. I'd like to thank Chris and the group for having invited me over here this weekend. It's always a pleasure to be asked to go to anywhere to speak on recovery through the program of Al-Anon. And it's especially nice when you get invited back someplace. You know, I used to get invited to places, but didn't always get invited back. You know, after having been there, sometimes I create a little too much excitement and wouldn't be invited back. But I've had fun this weekend. Chris took me on a very adventuresome ride yesterday, and we went up to Quartz Mountain. And because, you see, my husband and I have this big, fantastic cactus garden, and we have been getting rocks from all over the world to go around the sides of it, and we write on the bottom of it, you know, where it's from and when we got it and all this kind of thing. And when she and Mary Jo visited our home last year, well, it was earlier this year. That's right, it was in January this year. They noticed that, and I said, I was really grateful, you know, people give you something to take back on the airplane, and... But they very graciously ordered to deliver these to my front door, and so therefore, you no longer have Quartz Mountain. because, you know, each one you see gets bigger and better. And so my rock has turned into a whole little bunch of rocks that they may or may not be able to get suitcases in the car now to bring them to my home. But I want to thank you for your rocks. I hope that's not illegal what we did. The way they kept saying, here comes the ranger, get in the car, makes you wonder, you know. Makes you wonder about those things. But we have had a good time, and the really funny part was we were driving along, and all of a sudden, you know, Chris almost, you know, smacks you on the windshield and everything with that emergency stop, jumps out and gets back in, and she says, and here's a gray rock. And I looked at it, and I said, Oklahoma chat? I mean, what have we got here? So I have this little rock to remind me of Chris. But you know, coming here and doing these things are fun. These things are fun. To talk about recovery is fun. I used to think talking about the sickness was fun. I must have thought it was fun because that's all I ever did every time I opened my mouth. I would tell you how bad it was and how tragic my life was, and my life is not that way. You see, my name is Mary Pearl, and I'm an Al-Anon who's happy, joyous, and free. Hi there. I'm here today, this morning. I'm going to talk on two topics today, and the first one is sponsorship, and this one is not a difficult topic for me to talk about because I've had it ever since I got here, and I know a lot about it. And the one this afternoon, I'm going to use y'all as guinea pigs, those of you who care to remain, because I have never done a talk. I've done some workshops on the promises, but I have never done a talk on the promises, so it'll sort of be exciting. God only knows what I'm going to say. Somebody, you know, people say, are you afraid when you get up to talk? And I say, no, y'all should be afraid. You have no idea what I'm going to say. And most often I don't either, because I learned a long time ago, when we were talking last night in one of the first talks that I was ever asked to give, I made all these little 3x5 cards, had all my notes there, everything gathered. You know, I was so organized. And I got up there and in a little nervous frenzy went, and it was like 52 pickup, you know. And all my notes were in the floor in no kind of order. And I just started to kick them over to the side and said, oh, obviously I'm supposed to do this a cappella. You know what I mean? You know, who knows why I'm up here and doing what I'm doing. Sponsorship. What exactly is sponsorship? Now, how many people here have a sponsor? That's really good. Now, how many people use their sponsor on a regular basis? Oh, what happened to our hands? You know, I went to a group in Little Rock a few years ago. And by the way, I'm from North Little Rock, which is a separate town. But I went over to the big city of Little Rock, and one of the girls that I sponsor, and they had asked us to come and do a program on sponsorship, how it works as being a sponsor and how it works as being sponsored. And at home, we call that being a pigeon. Some people call it babies. I figure it's pigeon, and you know why that, what pigeons do. But anyway, come on, get a grip, lighten up. And we ask, you know, how many people in here have a sponsor? And we raised our hands, and we were the only two there that had a sponsor. And I said, this is really shocking because this is a group been around for many, 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 many years. But they say, well, the group sponsors everybody. And I find out that when you have a group sponsor and you don't have a sponsor, you know, because that doesn't work for me. Sponsorship is receiving and giving practical, logical solutions with a spiritual principle. That's basically what it is. Now, to put it in a little, to give you an illustration, I love to travel, obviously. And I've traveled, pretty well traveled. And especially if I'm going to go on vacation and I'm going to travel, I want to go and I want to get the most out of my trip. I want to do the best things there are to do. I want to have the most fun possible for the amount of money I've expended to get there. And I don't want to end up spending 2 days over here doing some dumb something when there was something really nifty to do over there. And I missed the whole thing. And that's the way I do sponsorship. I like to have a tour guide. And a tour guide is somebody who's been there, who's done the deal, who knows the way to go, who knows the side roads not to go down, and who'll give you the benefit of that information. Now, a tour guide in the real world out there will tell you all these wonderful things, and this is what we're going to do. And if you decide that you don't want to do that, they don't care. They'll just let you go off in the weeds there and get yourself killed if that's what you choose to do. Sponsorship is a teeny bit different. They'll let you do it, but they care. You know, my sponsor has never told me that I couldn't do something or she couldn't force me. You know, I always love it. I say when somebody I'm sponsoring talks to another and said, oh, she'll kill you for that. Said, you can't do that. She'll kill you. And I thought, you know, I don't know why they think I'd kill them. You know, I don't know why they think that. Now, I know that some people get intimidated by someone who's very forceful, you know. But I've never, as far as I know, I've never killed a pigeon to date. I have felt like it upon many occasions. But the bottom line is what you're going to do is going to kill you. And I really fight hard not to watch you kill yourself. I hate that. Being a sponsor, that's the one drawback I hate more than anything, is sitting there and watching someone you love make a conscious decision to hurt themselves. And you see it day in and day out. And I know it hurts my sponsor. She had to watch me do it too. You know, you get the best of advice and then you go on off and do it your way. And when you do that enough, you'll learn that she knew better and you don't always have to challenge everything she says. You can go ahead and take that information. Now, I believe in structured sponsorship. And that means we have definite things to do in sponsorship. And I have assignments that I had to do, and the people that I sponsor have things that they have to do. And one of the first things you have to do is go to meetings. I won't sponsor someone who's not going to meetings because they're only hearing what you say. And you don't have all the answers for any one person. And so they need to hear what a bunch of people are going to say, run it past you. And then let's come up with a workable solution, that kind of thing. But so many times you have to remember that being a sponsor is not being someone's God. But I do, you know, we say it's a suggested program. Well, in our sponsorship family, we call it, we give directions and assignments. And anything over that, you have free time. You know, if you can get into a lot of trouble with what's left over there, you know. Because if, you know, they say, well, you just let them do their own thing and what have you. If I had been left to do my own thing, I wouldn't have kept coming back. I had to have somebody in there with me and pushing me because I was going to have to do everything I had not done before. And I didn't know how to do those things. If I could have done this deal by myself, I wouldn't have been here. If I'd known all the answers, because everything I did didn't work. What I did is what got me here. And if you remember that your best thinking on your best day is what got you here, you might be willing to listen to somebody else. You know, because anybody's thinking is bound to be up from that. And we say, well, it's just real hard for me to talk to someone. We have a girl in our group that would corner somebody in a bathroom in a movie theater and tell them her life story. But she couldn't call her sponsor. You know what I mean? Amazing to me. But when I talk to my sponsor, I know that I have someone that, number one, I can depend on that will stay out of the problem so that they can see the problem. You know, you have to have some objectivity with people. If you're in the picture, you can't see the picture. That's the reason it's so necessary to have somebody standing out here who can see the picture, show you what's going on. Because most often what I think it is not what it is. A sponsor needs to be a sounding board and a detective. I found that for me, you know, the people I sponsor say, where do you get all these questions? All my life, I was a why person. I was a why person. And I found that the most important thing in sponsorship is not knowing the right answers, but knowing the right questions. Because, you know, we have a tendency, at least I do, to tell it like I want it to be. And you have to have these little questions if you want to hear the truth. You know, you just make a little statement and then leave it alone and see what happens. See if anybody's going to challenge that, you know. Oh, well, let me see if I can get past that one. I can do this one on you, too. And I know I'm not that much different than other people, you know. That's one of the things I've learned in here is that we're all similar. You know, it's like the little kid that comes home from school and he says, "Teacher was mean to me today." And you say, "Well, what happened?" And he'll say, "Well, the teacher did this and such." Now, there are some parents I see today in the schools that jump in their car, run down, and rip off the teacher at that. But my mother would have said, "And why do you reckon the teacher did that? What had you done that made the teacher do that?" Oh, you know, you're a little part of the deal. So you have to know, and that's the reason I like to nail them to the wall, you know. They come in for their crucifix, you know. And they'll say, "Oh, God, she's going to ask questions," you know, and just count on it, count on it. We're going to find out the whole truth before it's over with. You know, I told him, I said, "It's real funny, but in a court of law, one of the things they ask you to do is tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And we don't know what the truth is. So we have to have people ask us questions so we can find out what the truth of a situation was." And that's what my sponsor did. Sometimes being a sponsor is just keeping the newcomer busy enough, just keeping them busy enough to keep out of mischief until the program can begin to take a place and work in their life. You know, I have a very creative mind, and I can go on trips just without leaving. I can do it just right here. You know, I could give me 5 minutes and I could be someplace else and totally out of reality. So I needed something to keep me focused, and that was the sponsor giving me things to do that would keep me focused. And I was told when I came in, said, "Well, how do you find a sponsor?" And I said, "I don't know. You know, how do you find one?" They said, "Stick with the winners." Well, boy, isn't that a big helpful tip. Who is the winner? Who are the winners? How can you tell a winner? Because there's a lot of people that look real good on the outside, but how are they on the inside? There's a lot of people who can talk the talk, but are they walking the walk? You know, and God knows you got to get the right sponsor. You can't make a mistake here because, you know, it's till death do you part. You know, that intenseness, you know, and it's sponsorship. It is not until death do you part. Although if my sponsor dies, I'll kill her. I remember a lady talking one time at a conference, and she said, "And my sponsor died." And I mean, cold fear just washed all over me. And I ran over there after the woman spoke, and I told my sponsor, I said, "Damn you, don't you die on me now." Because the thought of having to reestablish that kind of a relationship with someone else was really scary for me at that time. But it says, if you've got what we want and you're willing to go to any length to get it. I saw someone that walked the program, and I didn't know that's what it was, but I can tell you how I felt when I was around her. You'd walk into the meeting, and she would be the one that would be over there by the door. She wasn't sitting on the other side of the room holding court waiting for you to come in. She was the kind that would walk over and say, "Hi, my name is Lou Bell. We're glad you're here tonight." She was the one that always had a smile. She was the one that, she had a glow about her. Her eyes were clear. Her eyes were sparkling. I don't know that I can do this deal. And I told my husband, I said, "You know, I think I want that woman to be my sponsor, but I don't want her to be my sponsor either." And he said, "Well, why not?" And I said, "Because she's black. Don't want no black woman for a sponsor." Because, you know, I kept thinking, and a lot of people do this, well, you've got to be able to have someone to relate to. If you've had two kids, I have to have two kids. If you've had, had an affair with a horse, I have to have had an affair with a horse. You know, we think we have to match everything we do here. You know, we think we got to line up. And I said, I don't know how in the world I would ever relate to a black woman, because I was raised in Little Rock during the 50s. And when we had the troops in and the integration crisis and war with the blacks, the racial wars, and my mother was a racist, and I was raised to hate people that were different than myself. And that's as simple as it was. And yet here this one person kept coming up to me. But see, there's where the program was working, because her love was greater than my prejudice. Her love was greater. And so I asked her if she'd be my sponsor. And I told her right up front, you know, I said, "I don't like black people. Don't like them at all. Hate them, as a matter of fact." And I said, "How you feel about that?" And I didn't use the word black people either. And she said, "That's okay." She said, "Because in here, we're not colors. Not in these rooms." She said, "In here, we're hearts that hurt. It doesn't make any difference what race you are, what color you are, what religion you are, what belief system you have. If you're a heart that hurts, you're in the right place. and I knew I had the right sponsor. Now, it's because of her and because of working with her over the years that I don't care myself anymore what you look like, what kind of race you have, or anything. I don't have those prejudices and feelings about people anymore. And it's because God put that woman in my life. He put her in my life to save me with a lot of things. There was another thing that was really important. This lady was very, very spiritual. And she always had a sentence that irritated me. No matter what my problem was, she said, "Pray about it." Well, I didn't know anything to do with God when I got here. I had an episode with God, and I was mad at him. I got mad at him when I was 12 years old when my father died, and it was his fault because God was in charge of life and death, and therefore God didn't love me, and I wasn't going to have anything to do with him. And I told her I couldn't do the steps with the God thing. And she said, "That's okay." She said, "Why don't you lean on my faith till you have one of your own?" And see, I didn't know you could do that. And so I would ask her to pray for things for me because I wouldn't pray. And she did that for a long time. She let me lean on her and use her God until I could have one for myself. And she told me, she said, "You know, if I could, I'd give you my God. But if I did, I would take away the opportunity that you're going to have to find that God for yourself." And she said, "I'd remove that joy from you if I just gave you one." And she said, "But once you establish that relationship yourself, it'll make all the difference in the world." And I'm real grateful she did that. You know, and that's just like, I have people that I sponsor, and in our group, we have a sponsorship family. We don't, like, for instance, in my group, we have a very large group, and people say, "Well, how many people do you sponsor?" I said, "Well, God, I can't sponsor that many people. I mean, you're a human being, you know." I said, "But I've got people that I sponsor, that they sponsor, that they sponsor down to 9 generations. So when we're all there in the group, you know, at a meeting, there may be 70, 80 people of my sponsorship family that are there with me." And it is like, remember, it says online family groups, you know. And we are a family. And the benefits to that are, when I'm away this weekend, what are my pigeons doing? What are my pigeons doing? What if they need help? I can't always be there for them. Someone in the family can. Someone in that family can be there. And if they call someone that I sponsor, or if they call, you know, we have a rule. It says always call up. Don't call lateral or down. You know, and the reason we do that is if they don't know any more than you do, you're not going to get much. You call somebody who's been there longer. And so when I'm out, they can call my sponsor. You know, that's the way the deal works. And we're real proud of that. And you see, our sponsorship line from me goes back to Lubell, to her sponsor Ethel, to Arbutus, which I'm sure some of y'all know Arbutus, and then from Arbutus to Marguerite, and from Marguerite to Lois Wilson, who started Al-Anon. So we have a pretty good heritage there going for us, in the fact that if you stay in there and you do the deal, it'll keep going generation after generation after generation, because what you give, you pass on. And in doing that, it has made our group really, really strong. Really strong. There were certain words I was going to have to give up. Yes, but, what if, and I know. Now, those are 6 little words, but they can keep you in a world of hurt. Because when she would say something, I'd say, "Yes, but, don't you say," and she'd say, no, you don't say yes, but. Because when you say yes, but, what you're doing is you're staying unique. You're staying isolated, and your mind is closed. You're saying, "Yes, I hear you, but I'm not going to do it, and here's why." And then you start the justification and rationalization process. Explain to them why. And then the what if. Now, let's deal with what if. Now, that's a good one. What if? Hadn't happened yet. How do we know what if? I had a girl that was one of my grandbabies in sponsorship, and she was always figuring out solutions to problems that hadn't happened because she liked what if. And she'd sit around and she'd say, "Now, what if this happens?" And then she'd figure it out and work out her solution. And I said, "You know, Nancy, some of those ideas are really brilliant." I said, "You ought to write them down and put them in a book." And she said, "I will, Merp." And so she got her a great big binder, you know, and she had all of these things. And after about maybe 6 to 8 months, something like that, she came in and she had filled up an entire notebook of these solutions to problems that hadn't happened. And she had them indexed. I'm telling you, you know, we're talking a lot of work here. And she looked at me, she says, "I have it." And I said, "Fine." I said, "Turn it in." And she gave it to me, and I tossed it in the trash. And she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "It's of no value. It hadn't happened yet. And you never know what you'll do till it happens." I said, all these, how many times have you planned this is what I'll do if this happens and it happens and you don't do anything like that? I said, you know, we're trying to live a life that's God-centered and not self-centered. And I said, you're figuring out all the answers. You got all the plans here. And as long as you do that, I said, God's not running your life. I said, my God, I'd hate to think, well, let's see, I'm constipated. I was a book site here. And I'd have to go to the index and check it out. I said, I'd really hate to have to live like that. But she was living in the land of what if. There's another place you can live, and it's the land of someday I'll, too. Someday I'll do that. Someday I'll do that. It's called procrastination land. And then there was the I know. I know. As long as you know, no one can teach you anything. And when you think you know it all, then your mind is closed. So those were the things. And it's real funny how we think we know, and if we knew, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in. And yet we can't let anybody tell us something that works. And it would amaze me today. But I've done it, like say, to my sponsor, is that she would tell me something, and I would sit there and argue with that woman. I would sit there and argue with her when what I was doing didn't work at all, had never worked, was never going to work, but hers wasn't going to work, and I knew why. It's called contempt prior to investigation, keep you in ignorance forever. You know, it's like the person that says, I don't want any green beans. Why? Well, I don't like green beans. You ever eat green beans? Well, no, but I know I wouldn't like them for the way they look. You know, and that's stupid. Till you try it one time. If you try it and you don't like it, fine. But don't sit there and say, and that's what she would tell me. You know, go ahead and do the things. And she told me to do stupid things. Stupid things that didn't have anything to do with the problem. You know, you call her and you'd say, most of the problem started with he. Now, if your problem starts with something other than I, there's not going to be anything we can do here. But I'd say, he did so-and-so, or he didn't do so-and-so. And she'd say, is your bed made up? No. Go make up your bed and call me back. What does that have to do with the problem? I'd go in there and I'd make up my bed. I'd call back and say, all right, I got the bed made up. And she'd say, well, how about your kitchen? Is it clean? That is not what I called you about. And she'd say, that's okay, go in there and clean up your kitchen and call me back. And I'd go in there and I'd clean up the kitchen, I'd call her back, and I'd be so frustrated, you know, and I'd say, she'd say, no, have you dusted today? No, I haven't dusted today. I mean, this was not house cleaning day, this was bitch about him day. Doesn't she understand? What is the matter with this woman? And I'd keep doing these dumb things that didn't have anything to do with the problem. And you know, I had a sense of accomplishment when the day was over. And what she was trying to say is, we can't do anything about he, but we can do about what's right in front of you. And that was the thing. I would get so involved in what was out here that I would miss what was right in front of me to do. And that's the reason that was important for her to keep giving me those little dumb things to do. Because, you see, I'd get so focused on the problem that I forgot how to put clothes in the washing machine. And then you'd be running around in the morning trying to iron something at the last minute because, see, you weren't prepared because you hadn't done that stuff. And my life was in a bunch of chaos. I had a lot of little things that were just all weirded out because I had my mind someplace else. And what she was doing, she was getting me to take the right action. She didn't care where my thinking was. Because, you know, if you take the right action long enough, the thinking will follow. And I didn't know that. And it was one of those things she couldn't even tell me because I wouldn't have listened to her. I wouldn't have understood. I wouldn't have understood. The hardest things that you have to do is to quit doing. To quit doing. It wasn't the things she asked me to do. It was the things she asked me not to do. And I have an obsession and compulsion to bitch about things. You know, it's one of those things when I was growing up, my mother bitched about everything, and I hated it. I hated that in her worse than anything, and guess what? I are her. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why, because it was something I hated. It was something I don't like today, and I don't like it, but it was those things you just do it on automatic. You just do it on automatic. And so my sponsor told me I had choices. And so I didn't ever like the choices that she would point out to me. And that's another thing, that as a sponsor, you may see different choices that they can have. You know, you help them. Because a lot of times we get focused on we have one choice, and that's to make somebody else do some changing. You know, that's our choice. And start out with little things like, I don't know why, but most new people have problems with trash or garbage. We have one there. You understand? I mean, they don't carry out the garbage. They don't take out the trash when they're supposed to. Don't you men know that's your job? I mean, don't you understand the male-female thing at all? Women make garbage, men take it out. Don't you know that? After I stand in there in that kitchen and cook and slave, the least you can do, you ungrateful wretch, is carry the garbage out. Now, he says he'll carry the garbage out. But does he carry the garbage out? Not when I want it out. Seems to be a badge of honor if I take it out when she wants it out, then I've lost the game. I mean, I don't know. And I told her, I said, it makes me so mad. She said, have you agreed that that's what's going to happen here? I said, yeah, I told him. You know. So anyway, we had the conversation. He said, yes, he'd be glad to take the garbage out. So I thought, okay, it's okay. So I go in there and I do. And guess what? The garbage's still sitting there. And all I can see is the garbage. I mean, the garbage is right here on my face. That's the way an obsession does me. I don't know about you, but it's sort of like an octopus. It's hung on your face, and you can't get away from it. No matter where you go, there it is. And you're going, yeah! You know, I would be sitting at my desk at work saying, the garbage is in the kitchen. Rats are going to be crawling all over my kitchen. I know it. We're going to have bugs. It's all his fault. And I'd be sitting there letting it drive me crazy. And she said, you have a choice. You can take the garbage out yourself and quit bitching about it. Or you can let him take it out whenever he feels like it without you bitching about it. I don't like either one of those. Because neither one of those gave me the right to bitch about it. And see, I didn't know that about me. I didn't know that that's what the deal was, that I had to have something to be right about, that I had to feel better about me by pulling you down. I didn't know that about me. And she said, you're going to have to just let it go and keep your mouth shut. And it's hard. It's the hardest thing you ever do in your world. I was just trying to... You get a lot of neck muscles going there. And I don't have much of a neck, but I tell you, it's longer than it used to be. And you know, when I quit bitching about the garbage, he started taking it out in a timely fashion. It seemed to be a matter of honor that I wasn't going to make him take out the garbage. That's the deal, you know. And that was, with me, I was going to make him take it out. And I was going to bitch at him and rag him about it until out of sheer self-defense, he's going to go, okay, just shut up, you know. And then I won. That was the kind of little games that we played in our house. And it took a long time. But it was her pointing out to me, this is what you're doing. And then he'd think on me. He would call and report on me to my sponsor. That was cruel. He'd call and he'd say, Lou Bell, let me tell you what she's doing now to poor little J.D. Like he wasn't J.D., you know what I mean? And then she'd ask me about it. That's what irritated me about it. She'd ask me about it. Because, you know, the thing of it is, we have a tendency to only tell our side. Only tell our side. It's funny, too, to me sometimes when I'm working with somebody and you hear them talking about what's going on. And, of course, as newcomers, they don't know how to start a sentence with I. It's always he, she, it, you, whatever. You know, they don't know how to talk in first person. And you hear all this stuff, and, you know, if you had a picture of what they're talking about, and then you go to a meeting and you meet the other side. And there's this really nice, personable person, you know, and you're thinking, these people don't live together, couldn't be. And probably he's gone to his sponsor and told him what a bitch he's living with, you know. And the thing about it is, because we're all pointing fingers, and when you're doing all that blaming, nothing gets any better. Because the only thing you can do about it is you. And all those fingers pointing out there, you can point till hell freezes over, and it's not going to change. They are not going to change. You have to make the changes. Now, a good sponsor presents the program in a simple fashion. I think a lot of times one of my biggest character defects in Spotty, I want them to get it all tonight because I want them to get better. And you know, as newcomers, we want to get it all tonight too, you know, that kind of thing. So you have to remember, easy does it, and just give it to them in little bits. And the main thing is, do what you're saying. Lead by example. You know, it wouldn't do me any good at all to all the time be telling my pigeon, now, with your relationship, you need this, this, and this, and then they come to my house, and we're doing opposite all the time. That doesn't mean that you can't be human and have off days and stuff like that. But I try to have them to do what I do and not just do what I say. It makes a bigger impact because it's real easy for me to say, well, it's easy for you to say, but I don't see you doing it, and then you lose all credibility. I also avoid talking about my personal problems to people I sponsor. When they call, I've seen this happen a lot of times, when you call to discuss your problem, your sponsor's not in a good place, and they have to tell you all about theirs, and you hang up, and you what happened here? So when I have a problem, I call my sponsor. I don't have to. That doesn't mean when I have worked through something, I might not share, this was a problem, this is how I overcome it. But I don't see any point in dumping my problems on the people I sponsor. Because you need to be able to share recovery and not sickness. And to develop a little patience. Patience is real important. And it was something I didn't have any of when I got here. But I saw how I could go back to that person again and again and again. And it would look different to me. Situations always look different, but it was the same thing happening. Different people, different places. And I know she got sick and tired of telling me the same thing again and again. But you got to hear it until you hear it. You know, you can hear it a million times, but you don't hear it. It doesn't register. You know, the longest distance in the world is between the head and the heart for something to come down out of here and to fall down in here where you can really begin to use it. Because, you know, intellectually, you can go through it and say, yeah, I can see how that works. I can see how that works. I didn't do that. And do it over and over and over. And don't rush things. Don't try to push them too quick. You know, if I'd have had somebody saying, okay, now we're going to do step one this week, and we're going to do step two next week, and whatever, I mean, I'd have been berserk. Because, see, I did the 12 steps in 2 weeks. I memorized them. I thought that was it. You know, I could go in, and I could sit there, and after probably about 6 months of AA meetings, I knew how it works, too. You know what I mean? You know, you sit there, and you hear stuff, the repetition, you know, over and over and over. But the bottom line was I didn't know how to do it. And the sponsorship to me is get them started in the steps. And people say, well, how long do you think you need to be in the program to get a sponsor and start working the steps? Well, I don't know. How long you want to stay sick and die? It's your choice, you know. Because the longer you put off, because see, when you get a sponsor, you've had to make a commitment to your recovery. And I have seen people ask somebody to sponsor them and you never see them again. They scare themselves to death with a commitment, you know. But the bottom line is you need to get committed to your own recovery. And there's nothing I hate worse as a sponsor than to try to be dealing with someone who's not committed to their recovery. When I care more about their recovery than they do, it really irritates me. You notice I didn't say pisses me off. I said irritates me. Notice that. Cleaning up my act. Wanted you to notice that. The sponsor listens to all those outpourings, and that's the reason with newcomers, someone who's brand new to the program, I tell them I want you to call me a minimum 3 times a week. That doesn't mean I call you 3 times a week. That means you call me 3 times a week. Because, see, I want that person to get in the habit of calling and reaching out. I want them to be able to they're going to have to put some effort for it. That doesn't mean I won't call you in between, but I want you to call me those 3 times because we're going to have to build a relationship. And how do you do that? You got to get to know somebody. How do you do that? You spend time with them. And that's what it's all about. Okay, as a sponsor, you have to realize that the person you're working with is troubled, to put it mildly, and they're going to lie. They're going to lie. And they're going, because they've distorted the truth in their mind. Their minds are not well. So you have to really take what they're saying with a grain of salt and not put all your eggs in one basket. You have to realize sick people vision things in a sick way. And if you're in the situation, I had a lady that I sponsored, and I was there, and I heard her retelling an incident that happened, and I thought, wonder where she was. I mean, I was there, and I didn't see it at all like that. Wonder how come. Because, you know, if you're seeing it through feelings, feelings are filters, and filters change. It changes whatever you're looking at. It changes it. And so you have to remember that. Gratitude. I was told to develop an attitude of gratitude. I wasn't grateful for anything. I mean, I was angry. I was hurt, and I was scared. I was not grateful. And they'd say, oh, yeah, and then you'd hear somebody get up in the meeting and say, I'm so grateful my husband's an alcoholic. And you look at them and say, they are ready to go. They need to be committed today. You know, I'll never say that. Or we had a lady in our group one time that she'd say, I don't know why y'all laugh about these tragic things. She said, I will never laugh at the stuff that's gone on in my home. Trust me. And she was very sincere, you know. A couple of years later, one night, she was telling something, and she just burst out laughing. And I said, Catherine, that didn't happen in your home. And she said, what do you mean? I said, because you said you'd never laugh about anything happening in your home. Whose home that happened in? You see, what we think when we come here is not what will happen if we stay here, you know. Those things will change. And she had come to develop a sense of humor, just like I came to develop a sense of gratitude. And my sponsor started me out on a real simple thing. There was a guy that came to the meetings in a wheelchair. She said, if nothing else, every time you come in this door, you'd be grateful that you're not in a wheelchair, that you walked in here tonight. And you see, I had taken those kind of things for granted. It never occurred to me to be grateful that I could breathe, that I had 10 fingers, 10 toes, that I could walk, that I could think, that I had hair to comb. I mean, there was just a lot of things that I didn't. And so we had I had an assignment at night because I had a lot of problems of going to sleep. And a lot of people have that, and it's because you can't turn your mind off. When you get there in bed, your mind is still going 100 miles an hour. And so she told me, she said, I want you to think of a gratitude basket, and you pull it down on that rope out of that ceiling, and you start putting those things in there that you're grateful for. And she said, you start with the letter A, and you put in there three things you're grateful for that start with the letter A. And then you go to B, and you put three things you're grateful for, and I would always fall asleep before I would fill my basket. Before I get to the end of the alphabet. And I said, but what if I get to the end of the alphabet? That was yes, but what if. That's a conjunction. But if is yes, but what if contracted. She said, start at the front and do it again. Oh, well, now that you've got it that simple. You know. Then she told me to get up in the morning, and she said, I want you to start your day different. How do you start the day? I said, very badly. I am not a morning person. I'm still not a morning person. I don't get up with tremendous amounts of joy in my heart when my little eyes flit open and say, oh, I'm so glad I made it through the night, and here I am. I don't do that. I don't feel that in the mornings. But you know what I learned to do? You don't have to feel it to do it. If you're waiting to feel it, you'll miss the whole thing. You do it long enough, and then you'll feel better about it. And so she told me that I was supposed to open my eyes and say out loud, good morning, God. Isn't that hokey? Isn't that hokey? And she said, well, what do you usually say? I said, well, in my mind, I usually say, good God, is it morning already? And she said, well, we're going to do the same thing. Instead of good God, it's morning, we're going to say good morning, God. It's the same thing, just rearranged a little differently. And she said, say it out loud because you need to hear it, because what you hear makes more impact than what you think. If, as long as it's in your head, you don't really hear it until you hear it. Say it out loud. Because there's a lot of times that when I'm telling my sponsor something, I know what the answer is, because now once I've heard myself say it out loud, I know what the problem is. You know? But as long as I have it in my head, it's just going, I can't get it out, and I don't know what the deal is until I get it out. And a lot of times when I'm talking to her, it had nothing to do with what's bothering me. But in the course of talking to her, I hear what I need to do about what's bothering me. It's really amazing how that works. I don't understand it. If I did, I'd probably try to fix it and screw it up. But anyway, I would sit there, and when we would go through these things, and she would say, now, I want you to, what's the next thing you do? And I said, well, I go to the bathroom to pee. What do you do? I mean, like, you know, and she said, well, good, that's what you're supposed to do. She said, you go in there, but she said, you put a note on your mirror in your bathroom. And said, you put on that note, good morning, Mary Pearl. I love you. There's nothing going to happen to you today that we can't handle together. God. And she said, I want you to read that out loud, and I want you to look in that mirror. Now, that's spooky. I don't know if I want to do that or not. And she said, I didn't ask you if you wanted to do it. I don't believe there was a choice involved there, you know. This is what I'm telling you want to do if you want to feel better over here. You got to do all the things you don't want to do here in order to get the results you want over here. And what you want to do doesn't have anything to do with anything. And see, that is, I don't understand. And she said, that's right. So, when you understand you don't understand, then you might have an ability to understand. So, because then you'll do what you're told to do. That's the bottom line. You'll do what you're told to do. And so I put that sign on that mirror. And I'll tell you, it's real hard to go in there when you don't have a God, and you don't know that you even want a God, and you got to talk to God, and worse yet, hear him talking back to you, but it's in your own voice, so it don't count. I mean, that was my mind. And she said, look at yourself in the mirror. I couldn't give myself eye contact in the mirror. That was really, really uncomfortable. Now, women stand in front of a mirror all day long. You put on a face and you do your makeup and stuff. You don't ever look at yourself. You're looking at an eye. You're looking at a cheek. You're not looking at the eyes. You're not doing that. And to have to stand there and look at those eyes looking back, and many times dead eyes looking back at you in there, and to tell you that you are loved by God, I would cry. I would cry. It would just, it would tear me up. I couldn't do that deal. And I'd just keep on trying, and I'd choke it out because, she told me to do this, and she'd ask me, did I do it, you know. You know, and you can't lie to your sponsor, you know, not like that. I mean, you can tell little lies, but if they ask you point blank, then you got to tell the truth point blank. If they narrow it down, near enough. Like, did you do the reading on the mirror out loud this morning? See, you have to do it that way with people. Because you say, you do your reading? Oh, yeah. Well, I did yesterday or the day before, see. But you just say, oh, yeah. You know, so I've learned you have to be very specific, you know, like nail them to the wall. And then you get the whole truth. You know, I got one that I've got an assignment for her every morning. She's supposed to get up and walk. And when she's walking, she's supposed to be saying the serenity prayer and meditating when she's walking. And I've given her assignment to walk around 4 blocks. The woman finds it very difficult to walk. She's extremely heavy. And I told her, I said, you're going to die, but we're going to take care of the whole person here. So you're going to get out and you're going to walk while you're doing your deal. Even if it's just around that 4 blocks. She says, but there's hills and ups and downs. I said, that's the way life is. There's ups and downs, but you're going to walk that walk. And then I'll call her. And I'll say, did you walk today? Well, now well means no. Well means I was running late and I had to get the kids off to school. Well means something happened during breakfast. Well means the dog was out there wiggling his tail and I got absorbed in that. I mean, you know, well has a lot of features, but the answer to well is no. And I've learned, so what I've done to get her started was I go walking in the mornings, and so when I get there walking over at the mall and doing my 5 miles, I'd get in my car, drive on the other side of Little Rock, go to her house, drag her out by the hand, and walk around them 4 blocks. You know, I told her, I said, one of these days I'm going to come over here with a chain and just pull you around the 4 blocks at the back of the car. I said, you have to do something different. Okay, that was a year ago. Ann's walking a mile every morning now. She's up to a mile. She's lost 35 pounds. She's feeling a little better about herself. And she's also developed a relationship with God walking those 4 blocks with him every morning. You know, so it's those dumb little assignments that help you to be the way you're trying to be over here, but you don't know how to get there. You've got to use the telephone. You can't be afraid. It's so funny, you know, they'll call and then there's just nothing on the phone. And yet when they see you at the meeting, they can't shut up. You know, that kind of a deal. They're going to have to learn to call. Because, you know, I go to the meetings to get myself. I don't just go to the meetings to sit there. And I don't go to meetings in order to have engagements with the people I sponsor. You know, that's not the purpose of it. I have to encourage them to get to meetings and to deal with those problems that people use to keep from going to meetings. I love it. People, you know, I could say, well, I didn't have a setter for the dogs. I had one that tried that. They'll try anything, because I would have tried anything. See, that's the bottom line, and I know that. But you try to, like, for instance, you know, if they have children and if they have babysitting problems, I know different resources to go to help them to overcome those babysitting problems. And it ain't going to be me. I ain't going to do that babysitting because I'm going to be there at the meeting. And it always irritates them, you know, when you go to the meeting and then they'll call and they'll say, well, what happened? What happened at the meeting? And I'll say, it was a great meeting. Great meeting. And they'll say, well, what happened? I said, you should have been there. And they'll say, well, and I said, well, I got what I went for. I will never know what you missed because you weren't there. And the reason I say that, you can go to any meeting, and after the meeting, we can all sit around, and we can talk about what you got out of the meeting tonight, and no two people got the same thing. But everybody gets their needs met in the meeting, so we'll never know what they miss. We'll never know. And I also found that if you give them a meeting over the telephone, they don't have to go to meetings. I don't sit there and talk for no 2 or 3 hours on the phone trying to whip them into shape, that kind of a deal, because first of all, I don't have the time. And secondly is that when I do that, then I don't make it necessary for them to go to the meeting. Why should they go? They've already had a meeting. Hell, I talked to her for 3 hours today. Isn't that enough Al-Nam for one day? You know? So I'm going to do it. I try to remember the silver rule. Don't do for others what they can do for themselves. Don't do for them what they can do for themselves, because we are usually spiritually lazy people. We had much rather somebody else do it for us so we don't have to do it. Don't have to. Now, like I say, we're wary of giving advice, but I do make suggestions. And they call them damn well betters. Newcomers who are very, very sick, who can't, you know, I have people that, I have a girl that went into a crying fit one night because she couldn't decide whether to order a hamburger or a hot dog. Now, that's sick. Now, that kind of person, you can't give a bunch of suggestions to. You're going to have to give them a definite things to do and not to do. And I'm not talking about, like for instance, I tell people when they come in, let's not make any life-changing decisions for a year, all things being equal. Now, if that means if you're living in an abusive situation where you're getting beat up or whatever, certainly you need to take some action to remove yourself from those things. But most of us, when we get here, we've been in unacceptable situations for a long time. And so it wouldn't hurt you to stay there just a little longer. You know, if you're single when you come in, I tell you to stay single. If you're married, I tell you to stay married. You know, if you're separated, I tell you to stay separated. Just wherever you are, we'll start from where you are. Because, you know, they come to two or three meetings and they think all of a sudden, now we've been separated for 8 months because it doesn't work. And I've been to three meetings and he's been to two AA meetings. I think we can do it now. I got a newsflash for you. Stark raving sober is worse than drunk any day. Man, them dry drunks are rotten, you know, and we have them too. We have them too. You know, we have those dry emotional drunks that we go on, you know. There's no mental sobriety or emotional sobriety in the house, and it took a long time because, you know, it's called balance. Think about it. How long did it take you to get some balance, you know? And you're flipping it. You know, like one day I love him, I love him. Next day I'll kill that sumbitch, you know. You know, you have to learn to find some balance in the middle, and that's what my sponsor giving me all these things to do, and we don't focus on the relationship. You know, everybody comes in and they want to focus on the relationship. There is no relationship until there's a you. And all the thing was the other person. The relationship was the main deal. And if you're not the main deal in your life, you'll not have any healthy relationships. Because you got to get better before you can have a healthy relationship. And I always tell them, don't worry. The relationship is so screwed up now, what the heck? And you're going to be a different person, and he's going to be a different person. So why worry about fixing the sick one? Why don't we try to worry about the new ones over here that's going to happen? Because you just can't understand how much different if you come and work the steps that you're going to be. And a lot of these problems that you're having won't exist because you'll be doing things different. And when you do them different, things change. But nothing changes till something changes. And as long as you keep focusing on that other person, and what I call it is making them a higher power. How many people had, you know, what you think about the most becomes your higher power for that day. If it's your finances, or if it's God, if it's your wife, if it's a dog, whatever you think about the most for that day becomes, because that's what you're focusing on. And that's the power that's directing your thoughts and actions. That's the higher power, whatever is directing you. So we have to get into a more healthy form of directions. And get out of worrying about, well, what if I lose him? There's lots of hims out there. And with any luck, you can get another sick one. They're... And I will guarantee you, if you don't change you, you will get another sick one. Because that's the only thing that's going to put up with you. Sick. I'm serious to tell you, sick calls to sick. I have never, you know, I always love it. People say, well... I was such a well-adjusted person until he came into my life. Man, I don't buy that. I'm sorry. I don't buy that. You know, we don't make each other sick, but we sure seem to be able to find one another, don't we? You know, the neat thing about the meetings is that you don't even have to look. They're all grouped, you know. If you want a sick one, there they are, you know. I love it when every once in a while you'll get one of the newcomers from AA decides he wants to check out an Al-Anon meeting. Trolling, if you will. Let me come over and see what they got to pick from over here in this room. That last woman I had drank, I'll get one that doesn't. This one will go after me, chase me with a knife. And you boys know from the news lately how dangerous that can be. I bet you there's drinking in that home. You can just count on it. She didn't do nothing I hadn't thought about, I tell you. And it's so funny, you know, our Al-Anon group, when we heard the news that night, we went to the meeting and everybody got there and went, yes! And all the guys were doing this. Okay. As a sponsor, you realize that you're carrying a message and not a person. Many times we think that when we're sponsoring somebody, we have a responsibility to carry that person. That's not true. You carry a message. And whether they get the message or not, you can't carry the person. They become a big load for you when you do. And emotionally, it will drain you. If you see a sick dependency, a lot of times, you know, the pigeon has a tendency to put you on a pedestal until you do something human, then they hate you. You know, we're good judging one another, and that happens, you know. But the bottom line is we're all human beings, and we don't need anybody on a pedestal, but we don't need anybody. You're not looking down on that person either. You just realize that they're a sick person, and we're all sick people here trying to get well. You know, it tells us in the AA 12 and 12 that at all times people are emotionally disturbed. There's some time or another during your life you're going to go through an emotional disturbance, and it says, and all are frequently wrong. And that's what we have to remember is that, you know, I can be wrong, you can be wrong. We've got to give the other person the right to be wrong, and we also have to give ourselves the right to be wrong. I encourage the people I sponsor to read the Al-Anon material and also the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, that's not socially acceptable in a lot of areas of this country, but I'm sharing my experience. And my experience is there's nothing that's better written on alcoholism and the family illness than the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it talks about, and when I read that book, and we've been studying, we have a Big Book study meeting at our Al-Anon group and for the last 5 years, and the one thing that everybody will tell you is that the only difference between what we feel between an alcoholic and us is an allergy to alcohol. When you take the allergy to alcohol away, we have the same obsessions, we have the same compulsions to do things. Remember, our drug of choice is adrenaline or another person. It's the excitement level that we get out of that other person. And when you put that in that book and you read it, you will see yourself. And that's the reason I like for them to read that and to study that and to understand, because many times when you come into Al-Anon, because you're not the alcoholic, you have a tendency to look at the alcoholic as being defective instead of being sick. And we think that we're better than, smarter than, because look what they did. But look what you did without the benefit of alcohol. I have done things stark, raving, sober that a lot of drunks wouldn't even think about doing. I'm serious to tell you, you know. So I have to do that. I also tell them not to be into a lot. I tell them to get rid of their outside reading material, all their self-help books. Now, any really good Al-Anon has a whole library of self-help books. I'm okay, but you'll never be okay. You know, how to do this, how to do that. If all of those self-help books worked, we wouldn't be here. And see, if self is the problem and self is sick, how in the hell can you help self? How can self help self when self is sick? It doesn't make any sense to me. And all you do is you confuse yourself. Because what we're going to tell you to do in Al-Anon or in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the same thing. We're going to tell you work those 12 steps and how to work those 12 steps. So I tell them to get rid of that. They said, does that mean I can't read my Bible anymore? When did you read it last? Well, 6 months ago. But does that mean I can't read it if I want to? No, it doesn't mean you can't read it. I said, I'm not telling people that. I'm just saying, let's stay out of all the philosophies and stuff that you find in all the little books at the bookstore. You know, they've got a lot of things out that's special. But don't you see, I'm different. You see, my daddy was an alcoholic. Well, my mother was nut, what? And I said, well, am I supposed to go to Mother of Nuts? You know? You know? You know, what about the person who's an adult child of normal parents? Where do they go? You know, we have some of those in here. They're hiding out, you know. Not everybody had a deranged childhood, but we don't focus on that. We focus on what's right here and right now. As a friend of mine, Father Hillary, says, it's not important how the horse got his ass in the mud. Get it out. You know, you can study all day long about, let's see, now, how did this happen? You know, Clancy talks about it. He says, it's like being on the Titanic, and the Titanic's going down, and you say, let's see, now, how did this happen? Let's see, we were coming here at so many knots, and there was this iceberg over here, and the boats continued to go, and people said, get in the lifeboats, get in the lifeboats. Shut up, I'm figuring this out. And by the time that the boat goes under, you go, I got it. But the only problem is you've drowned. You figured out the solution. So it's not important to know so much why you're here and why what happened. The bottom line is you are here. Accept the reality that you are here at this point. How you got here is immaterial. But now what are you going to do now? And that's what the sponsorship is all about, to pull you out of that, to keep you going from where you are now. It doesn't make any difference how you got here. And remember what it felt like when you were new. Remember how it felt. Remember that feeling of being scared and being lonely and feeling alone. Remember that when you're dealing. Give them lots of love. Give them lots of hugs. The hugs and the smiles are just as important sometimes as the ass kickings are, you know. I also teach the people to be of service to your group. Have them learn to be a member instead of an attender. There's a big difference between attending meetings and being a member of your group. A member of the group gets there ahead of time. They don't just tool in here at the last minute. That's not the way a member does. You know, we used to have family dinners. Nothing to really peeve my mother more than people coming in, putting their feet on the table, and the men's over bugging out, you know. But we have some of those kinds in our groups. You know, that they'll get there at a minute before 8 and they leave at a minute after 9, and they are really shortchanging themselves. They are absolutely shortchanging yourself because you're missing out on the fellowship. And you're missing out on being a part of. We had a girl that came to our meetings, and she'd come in, and she would sit on the bench over by the door. She'd never even come in, hardly out of the doorway. You know, and she'd sit there, and she'd come after the meeting had started, and she'd leave when we'd start to do the prayer. So you couldn't get over there, and you couldn't say hi, and you couldn't give her a card, and you couldn't do anything with her. And then all of a sudden, one day, she came in, and she moved down on the bench a little further away from the door. And we watched her. And then finally, after about 6 months, she would finally stay long enough for you to be able to tell her who you were and give her your name. She wasn't able to give you her name, tell you who she was, or give you a number. You know, that's up to us. And we have little cards printed at our group. And it says, hello, you know, my name is so-and-so, and I'm glad you're here, and we want to be of help to you. And we put our phone number on that card and give it to that newcomer. Because you never know. You never know. You may be the only Al-Anon place they'll ever go. And they're scared. And you know, when you go to Al-Anon, I think a lot of times the alcoholics, most of them have an idea that they might have something wrong with their drinking when they go to an AA meeting. But you'd be surprised how many people come through the doors of Al-Anon thinking, there's nothing wrong with me, it's somebody else. And it's only when they get desperate enough that they'll make that call for them. They'll call for an alcoholic any day of the world. But to call for themselves and say, I have a problem and I need help, that is very, very difficult to do. I teach them, like I say, to be a part of their group by coming in and help setting up the tables, making the coffee, going over there, straighten the literature cabinet. The books look weird. You know, I spent a lot of time making that cabinet look weird. I was literature chairman for 12 years, and I'd go in there and I'd scramble those books, and I'd go in there and I'd say, my God, look at that literature cabinet. Get over there and help me, would you? And they get over there, and you know what? They go, oh, I don't have this book. Oh, I don't have this piece of paper. Well, let's take that home. Read it. Tell me what you think about it. We got a new pamphlet in today. Why don't you do a book report for me on it? Let me know if it's worth reading. I know that pamphlet wrong side outwards. We've had it 15 years. Doesn't make any difference, you know. You go ahead, you know, you get them to do it because they're going to learn something from doing that. One of the pieces of literature that I think is excellent for newcomers, and I had it laminated and carried it in my books all the time, and it's the three views of alcoholism. And it's that view number two, the alcoholic speaks to his family. It tells you, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Don't lecture, blame, or scold me. You wouldn't be angry at me for having diabetes or cancer, and it's a disease too. Don't accept my promises. I'll promise anything to get off the hook, but the nature of my illness prevents me from doing things, even though I meant that at the time. Don't accept my lies, because I lose respect for people I can fool. Don't accept my responsibilities. Don't pay my obligations. Don't go to work to take care of me. And do learn all you can about the disease of alcoholism and your relationship to it. And do talk to the people in Al-Anon, because they're the experts in this. You know, those kind of things, if you can give that to that, especially when they're living in that practicing situation, it'll keep them out of a world of trouble. Keep them out of a world of trouble. And I just love that piece of literature. You know, we have a lot of...